Good evening and welcome to Countermeasures. We're here on Anchor FM. Proud to be here again for the continuing series and saga of Countermeasures. I am Bruce Nixon and he is...
Greg Rath.
And that's Greg with two G's, just in case you were confused. I'm not confused, but the listeners might have.
That's the correct way of spelling it. Everything else is wrong.
I know. It's just something that I had to get out there because I don't think people knew that before.
No. That's the correct way of spelling it.
Okay, so we've been here now for several weeks. We're excited. You know, the last few times we've been with you, good people, we've been talking about things of federal budgets and state budgets and how things work. And we realized that it all fits into a big, big picture. And we want to drill down tonight. And we have, well, deigned, as it were, that we're going to talk about education tonight. On the state level, some of the federal level, and how it coexists with the purpose of family, mom, dad, and kids. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. If you've listened to a previous couple of shows, we've talked about the foundation is family, God, and raising our children and being involved in those children. That's the key to the success. I mean, we talked about throwing money at all that kind of stuff. Unless you're given the foundation of the children, nothing else matters.
So it's fair to say that the foundation of the culture is family, and it's been eroded to the point where if we don't restore it, there's going to be a problem.
Well, either that or the government's going to take over and raise your children for you.
Oh, you mean they haven't already? Well, I mean, we'll get into that.
Well, they're making a pretty damn good try at it right now.
Right.
You know.
Well, we're also proud to say tonight's program is brought to you by OLT Fabrication, located at 2301 West Broadway, right here in Phoenix. If you want to talk to them, they can do every steel job, big or small, fabrication, large steel, and erection at 602-276-4841. Do we have any other sponsors?
Yeah. In fact, there's a gentleman at Lifeboat Coffee that's located at 7th Street in Dunlap that makes the best coffee in the world. And I'm sitting right next to him.
Hey, thanks for that.
Come visit us. Come visit us over there. You come see me in the mornings.
Yeah. Tuesday through Friday, the 600 precinct is managed pretty much by and large from Lifeboat Coffee.
Don't tell my boss.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying if she tunes in, it's a good thing.
Hey, I am tactically located.
I was saying strategic.
Safest place.
I said strategic. You said tactic. I mean,
right?
Tomato, tomato.
Right? It's the safest damn place in Phoenix.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we have lots of visitors.
I got two guns. One for each.
Yeah. All right, but it's something near and dear to your heart. You have several kids at home. I have several kids at home. We've dealt with education. I've dealt with private schools by and large only because our family made the investment years ago to say we want to do Catholic education. And it's not any aspersions against public education in any way, shape, or form, but that's what we want to do. I was raised white Irish Catholic in San Francisco. I've raised all my kids in the Catholic faith. And they've gone to Catholic schools. Conversely, your children have done, you know, the Americana experience in public schools. You're a product of public schools. And I don't mean that in any negative way.
I mean, in jest. You know, and I tell you, and this gets back to being involved with your children.
Right.
You know, I went through this. I've got it all over my computer here. I pulled up the Arizona Department of Education. I'm looking at all kinds of things that, you know, they're supposed to be teaching from civics to history and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you want your kids to have a good education, you can do it in the public education, but you have to be involved with your children because the school is going to teach your children things that are mandated by the feds and all that kind of stuff, mandated by the state that you may not agree with. And it may go against your religion or whatever. If you're not involved with your children, so you can kind of be a stopgap with the crap that they're teaching. You know, the reading, writing, and arithmetic, I dig it. And I dig history, and I dig civics, and I dig art and all that kind of stuff. But when they start talking about condoms or, you know...
Gay marriage,
LGBT rights.
Whatever.
All that kind of stuff. And like I said, I'm not against any of that. But I'm going to...
From a secular civil society.
Right.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
And let's hold just for a minute. Let's taxi and hold short. Go backwards in time. We've got a long show ahead.
But right.
You're raised in Arizona in the public school system.
Correct.
Give us some kind of overview of your experience from grade school to high school, because in fairness, I think it's important for people to know that it hasn't been that long since what we believe, and I think we can observe, that things have gone off the rails somewhat. Not terribly here in Arizona, but tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I remember it was reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, you studied history. You know, there was nothing controversial being taught, from Darwinism
right.
to gay rights to any of that. And again, I'm not taking away from that. That stuff that we're talking about, some of that fringe stuff, you know, if you want to teach your children that, teach your children that.
Where you are the first educators.
Right? Absolutely. We're the first educators. So, and again, we get back to, if you want a good education from the schools, you can get it, but you got to be highly involved. You got to be in your kids' textbooks. You got to be with them and understand what they're doing. Volunteer at their school. And if you're not doing that, you're doing a disservice to your children. You know,
that's true. And a lot of people can't in one respect because they work necessarily.
You know what? I worked second shift.
Right.
I worked weekends.
Say, tell us about that.
I worked weekends. I worked second shift. My wife worked. And you know what I did? Because I so wanted to be with my children, I couldn't be there at night at dinner time and stuff. My wife did that. But you know what I did? I volunteered at their school. I played at recess. I went to lunch with them. And you know what's great about that? When you are active in your child's education, doing that kind of stuff, it's amazing what teachers and principals and administrators will let you do and let you ask for. I became very good friends with several principals, and I found that there were teachers that I were not really happy with just because I didn't like their attitude or I didn't like their outlook on life. And all I had to do is, because I cared and because I was involved, I just walked in the principal's office and said, hey, I don't like this teacher, or I don't like the way they teach. And he or she would say, well, where would you like them to go? Even though they're not supposed to do that, hey, that's the way it, you know, that's the way it works. If you're involved with your children and at least be involved with them at home, know what they're studying. One of the other things that's been interesting, I've been, you know, when my daughter was doing this online nonsense with this COVID nonsense, a lot of people were getting a chance to watch teachers teach online because kids right. were at home. And I tell you what, I've talked to a lot of people going, you know, putting their hand over the mouth, my God, what is this garbage they're teaching? I mean, they get into politics and stuff like that. And you know what? If you want to teach politics from a historical perspective, I dig it. If you want to create a debate and say, okay, this is how politics works, absolutely, because that's true history. That's true, you know, Americana.
Absolutely.
But
that's,
you know,
one
what?
Thing, right.
Yeah, but you know what? Don't get up there and tell me, you know, don't perpetuate some sort of pet project or any of that kind of. That's none of your goddamn business. It's none of your business to tell my kid that, you know, whether it's sex education or any of that kind of stuff, even though you're in the government and we elected you and you think you're smarter than I am, au contraire, mon frere, I'm smarter than you are. I understand my kids better than you are. I have my own belief system, and it's none of your damn business. You know what? You want to talk about respect. You want to talk about good citizenship and non-bullying and stuff like that. I get it. I totally support that. We got to have safe schools and stuff like that. But I'll be damned if you're going to tell my kids about wearing condoms in fifth grade. I'll be damned if you're going to talk about sexual activity. I'll be damned if you're going to talk about any of that garbage that is leading our kids astray. The stuff that they see on social media and
not
all that.
Not to mention defund the police and BLM and all the things that are anti-American in right. many respects, right? But let's pump the brakes just for a moment. Go
sure.
back in time. What year did you graduate from high school?
High school, 88. 1988.
So 1988, George Bush is president.
Right.
I will not raise taxes. No,
read my
new
lips.
Taxes.
Read my lips.
Read my lips, right? So you graduated eighth grade in 84.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, I mean, you're a child of the late 70s, early 80s.
Yep.
What was it like here in Arizona? I mean,
you know what? It was mom and dad. It was moms and dads. All my kids had two parents. They were married.
All your friends.
You all my friends. Dad worked. Mom stayed at home. And I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent, but I tell you what, it worked. It worked. Look at our generation.
Was Arizona much more, or Phoenix, I should say, was it much more of a small town feel then?
Absolutely. I mean, what was it? 1992, we had 2 million. Now we got 7 million. Yeah, absolutely.
Explosive growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll give you a perspective. What would happen if your child walked into your principal at a public school and said, hey, I would like to teach the kids how to clean a rifle? You'd have a freaking SWAT team there, right?
Right.
Okay, and I'd be there visiting, finding out whether or not this kid has, you know, mental issues. We're going to talk
red flags,
right?
Red flags.
Oh yeah. Beep, 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 beep. Well, I can tell you, in sixth grade was one of those years.
What school were you at?
I was at Palo Verde School over at 39th Avenue and Orangewood area.
Okay,
right, not too far from where we are, and it was interesting. And again, I'm not advocating taking guns to school. I'm just we're illustrating.
It's an example of Americana in Phoenix.
My task was to do my first speech, and I had no idea what I was going to do. So I came home and I was talking to my dad about it. Excuse me, and he said, "Well, why don't you teach him how to clean a gun? That's what I taught when I was in school." And I'm like, oh, okay. So I went and talked to the principal. Principal says, yeah, no problem. Just leave the bolt at home. Here comes a useless piece of wood and metal. And bring it to school. Put it in my closet. And when you're ready to come get it for your whatever hour class, come get it. Take it over there. And when you're done, bring it back. Well, so I walked to school with it on my shoulder in a case. Had my gun cleaning kit. And went into the principal's office. He wasn't even there. I just walked into his office, put it back in the closet. Third, fourth hour, whenever it was time, I walked across the campus, grabbed my rifle, grabbed my toolkit, walked across campus in front of teachers and God and everybody with my rifle on my shoulder, taught everybody how to clean a rifle. We talked about safety and that sort of thing as well. And guess what? Nobody complained. Nobody called the cops. In fact, it was such a hit that my speech was chosen out of 4 or 5 to be done in front of the entire school, 500-600 kids, parents, and all that kind of. And you know what? No SWAT team showed up. You tell me what changed.
I was just going to ask you that question. That's really important now.
We're scared of our own shadow. Nobody freaking. We have let society and social media and media raise our children. I'll give you another example. Here's a great example.
I'd love a great example.
Great example. It's work in South Phoenix. Rolling out to my beat. Hot call comes out. Suicide in progress. Some lady was threatening suicide. So I was close. So I drove by, stopped. This lady was crying, sitting out on a picnic bench. Long story short, she tells me that she's had it up to here with her son. He won't do what she asks. And because he would not get in the car and go to church with her, God bless her, going to church, right? And that he frustrated her so much that she made an off-cuff comment that she was going to commit suicide, ran into her bedroom. And I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking to myself, I'd like to talk to this young man that has drove his mother bananas and asked her, okay, where's your son? Well, she points over to a 9-year-old, and I'm like, I'm thinking 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old,
right?
And I'm looking at her. I'm like, how old are you? And she goes, 31. I go, how old's your son? She goes, 9. I go, why aren't you whooping his butt back there, pulling him into the car and taking him to church? Well, you know what? The school tells the kids that if mom and dad touch him, to call 911 and on and on. So she's feeling powerless because the state's now raising her child. And I told her.
That's an excellent point. It really is an excellent point.
And that's probably 1995, 1996.
Of my 7 children, I raised them in the 90s and the aughts.
Right.
I've heard that 100 times.
Unbelievable,
100
dude.
100 times.
And I guess I didn't realize it at the time, but in my mind, I think back to that one example. I'm like, how did schools and government become so freaking powerful that they can get a 9-year-old to get their parent not to discipline him? I looked at the kid and I go, get in there. Your mom's going to whoop your ass here.
Yeah.
And he starts crying and goes inside. And I looked at her. I go, you can discipline your child. I'm not saying beat him, but I go, if you need to slap him across the face or pop him on the ass, go pop them on the ass.
Right. And I like to say if you use diesel, it's not waterboarding, but...
Use no. burlap.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't use a towel. Use burlap.
It was only said in jest. But, I mean, honestly, having raised kids in the modern world, you raise kids in the modern world, it's a very different landscape, right? When I was in school, you really had to focus on, I mean, we learned handwriting. You probably learned typing.
My kid, cursive?
Yeah.
She had no idea what cursive was.
No,
I'm
of
like,
course.
This is my adopted child.
It's a secret language.
Right. This is my adopted child. You know, my eldest children did their college and stuff like that. But then all of a sudden, I get a 5-year hiatus on having children. I adopt Michaela. And she comes in, and all of a sudden I asked her, she's writing. I go, why aren't you writing in cursive? She didn't even know what cursive was. We don't even teach it.
Right. But you probably learned typing.
One of the best things I ever learned.
Right. And we probably learned together, because I'm only a few years old.
I went to shop school.
Yeah. We could. Home ec. There was that available. I didn't do it, but I could have. But the idea was you learned things that were practical applications, right? In my regard, they were, okay, we're going to pay for this and pay for that.
Right.
In public education in San Francisco, my hometown, there were vocational schools and there was academic school. So you could go to Lowell High School
right.
in the public system and learn advanced sciences. That's okay. what you did in high school. I'm talking about high school. You could go to Washington High School and learn mathematics.
We had some magnet schools like that here.
Or you could go, and this is in the early 80s, of course. Right. You could go to O'Connell, which was a vocational school. Their nickname was the Boilermakers. You could be a pipe fitter, a plumber. You could work on steam, whatever. You learn how to do a trade, right? Right.
But well, that's a four-letter word now. Because you know why? Here's the deal. Whether and we're kind of getting off a tangent, but you hit on something that's really important. All this free education, getting rid of school debt and all that kind of stuff. Okay, great. Somebody still needs to turn a wrench. Somebody else still needs a pipe fit. Somebody still needs to run a hammer. And you know what? The reason they want free education, it ain't because that's going to get you a better job. It's so they can indoctrinate you. It's so all this garbage that I'm reading on the Arizona Department of Education of all the stuff, so they can drill that into you for 4 more years, so when you come out, you're going to vote Democrat. Simple as
and
that.
And you're beholden to the system that gave you free education.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
I mean, anyway, let's circle back to wagons. Of course, you're listening to Countermeasures here on Anchor.fm. Greg Rath, Bruce Nixon in the studio, in the bunker.
The bunker.
And we're talking about education tonight, and we've drifted around a little bit. You've had a great experience. Arizona was very good to you. Phoenix, very good to you. San Francisco, decent by and large. I know it's wackadoodle. We don't have time to get into that. But let's dive in. We're a third of the way through the program already. Let's dive in to some of the nuts and bolts about today. Because if you were to ask me and just say, hey, John Lillis, what do you think about education in the modern world, or Bruce Nixon, whoever, I would say it's garbage. Because kids come out, my inner city school experience coaching kids in San Francisco and talking to people here in Arizona is they're functionally illiterate. Many can't get a job. And I'm not saying that's a product of every school, but Arizona, this is going to stagger your imagination. Do you remember just a couple of years ago when there was a push Red for Ed and the fascist fist came up downtown?
You mean the communists?
Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
All right. So here was the premise, and this is going to shock you.
They were all over the news today. On Ducey's or on the
and they've gotten their propaganda pay raise. But here's the proposition: we can do better education if you give us more money. Now hold the thumb.
Right, right.
Arizona's 47th out of 50 in shittiest states in the union. 47th out of 50, sir. Meaning only 3 other states in the whole union were shittier than Arizona.
Right.
And so the proposition, if you give me more money, I'll give you better education. It sounds like bribery.
Well, it sounds like what we're talking about. How much money are you going to throw at it?
Well, I mean, it's just the
right.
that whole
Absolutely.
Nugget, right?
Right.
Okay. It should be infuriating to anybody listening that lives here that suddenly education is so important you could throw more money to do better.
It was funny. I was
Now, if they were fifth out of, 50, if you were in the top 5 and you said, I think we can do even better if you give us just a little more money. I'd be like, you know what? Just a little more money to be in the top two? Okay, maybe. I mean, that's a maybe.
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
I'm saying look at it as that proposition.
I get it. But, you know, it's funny. I was going through some news today, and there were some debates on the budget, and the whole room was filled with a bunch of Red for Ed people because they were pissed off because there was going to be a bunch of money allocated to the voucher program. And what does that do? That scares the people that are teaching in the at this level that, holy cow, because we all know they compete. The body in the seat gets some money, right?
Well, it's federal matching funds. There's food lunch programs. So, yeah.
But what's the worst thing for a public school? Voucher programs. You know why? Because I come in and say, you know what? I don't like your...
I'm going to send my kid to St. Charles Borromeo. Absolutely. I'm going to send my kid to wherever.
Well, and it's going to be... You can give it to private schools. Do you be able to use it for private schools?
That's what I'm saying.
And I think that's great because guess what that is? You know what that is? That's competition, my friend. That's entrepreneurship.
I mean, if the money is for education, mm-hmm. then I ought to use the money for education.
Right.
If I'm eligible for that. Their argument is, well, it takes a village.
No, it doesn't. It takes a family.
Come on now. You know and I know that you're just being a tough old white man, bigoted bastard, who doesn't want the village to raise their kids.
I don't.
Right.
But it's got nothing to do with me being white.
Yes, it does. I mean, that's what they'll tell you.
They do. According to them.
That's what they'll tell you, right?
Sure. And I've been told that before.
You're the monster in the room.
Right.
Not only are you white, but you're a cop.
Oh, God.
You are the monster in the room.
Right.
Anything you say is invalid. So let's talk about what we see in the numbers. What are they talking about? What are we uncovering here that they actually spend their money on? What do you see?
Well, you know, like I said, I went through a bunch of stuff, and there's a ton of stuff. If you want to...
Just do the highlights.
Well, I don't even know where
to... Don't raise your blood pressure too high, but right. I'm saying do the highlights.
How much do teachers
get paid?
Shit, I don't know.
I mean, is it saying the budget?
No, I don't have the budget up right now.
Oh, okay.
No, but... What I'm looking at is inside all this stuff that they're talking about is things that they're supposed to teach at different grade levels with regards
as
to...
As they say with our friends in Espanol, por ejemplo, for example, what are you talking about?
Well, all right, let's say we're talking about...
is there any reading in there? Is there reading as a line item? Do they teach reading still?
Well, I'm looking at global... I'm looking at, like, social studies and stuff like that.
Oh, give me an example of social studies.
Social studies. Let's see. You know, this... I'll just kind of start reading. You know, like, global studies for sixth grade. Beginnings of human society, such as early hominid development, stuff like that. Okay, cool.
Because that's important.
Okay. Well, it is if you're talking about history. History, I get it. But world religions, including, but not limited to, Buddhism, Christianity, Confucianism, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, Shintoism, Sikhism, Taoism, origins, founders, major tenets, practices. But they also talk about, don't forget atheism. Don't forget, you know.
Oh, you mean teach about the people that don't believe in a God mm-hmm. that have
Absolutely.
Their own religion?
Right.
They're afraid of a God that they acknowledge that there is no God.
Right.
But they don't want anybody else to think there's a God. So if there's no God, what are they afraid of?
If you sit in here and you pick this stuff apart, there are hidden stuff in there, and there's a lot of social
justice. It's a public school.
Justice.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a public school. Why are they teaching world religion from historical perspective?
It's history.
Yeah, I mean, are they picking and choosing which one is better?
I don't know if they're picking and
choosing.
How do
you get through 95 religions in a semester?
You can't.
So what are they saying?
I don't know.
No, I'm just being devil's advocate.
Right.
What else?
I don't know. You know, and so,
I mean, it seems to me what they're teaching. This is what they're teaching,
right?
If I can put it in one word, indifferentism. You see, all these things are out there, all the same. You can be indifferent, and it's perfectly fine. It's called indifferentism, and that's what that leads to. If you got 97 competing ideas. It's indifferentism. They're all equal. And I'm sure that's where they go with that.
My favorite one is describe how different group identities such as racial, ethnic, class, gender, regional, and immigration migration status emerged and contributed to societal and regional development characteristics and interactions over time.
Hold on. What grade is that?
This is, I believe, sixth grade.
Come on.
Right.
If that might be a master's level question because it takes a lot of information.
Right.
But you're going to indoctrinate a sixth grader into status?
Right.
Oh, like our president said, you know, not that many months ago, that He wants everybody to bum rush the border because they're all political refugees.
Oh, Jesus.
Right? I mean, you can believe that, right? Oh, and did you know that there's no border crisis?
There isn't.
No. And you know why?
Why?
Because breaking border laws is just a civil problem.
Ah.
It's not a criminal problem.
Well, my question to the people that want to that want no borders. When does the American dream disappear then?
Well, as far as they're concerned, there is no American dream. Because the American dream is oppressive, patriarchal, white in orientation, straight, heterosexual. And this has to go away. This has been the agenda in America for quite a long time.
And I don't touch on race much because I don't really want to get into that. But I think it's going to come back and haunt the Democrats. Because I tell you what, I've worked in predominantly Hispanic communities before. And, you know, I find it very interesting. I've worked with that group. My dad has a large Hispanic group that works for him. Amazing. They are Catholic, large families,
hardworking,
entrepreneurial. They're here for the dream. Now, we gotta patronize them so they'll vote for us. Give them all kinds of free stuff for the vote. But what's going to happen, and we're seeing it in California,
there's a little pushback.
There's going to get pushback because I tell you what, the Hispanic people are extremely proud. And they know they're not stupid people. They're not dumb. These aren't dumb people. These are hardworking people that are God-fearing people.
They're just like you and I.
They're no different.
They may not have had the same opportunity, but they're by and large the same
people.
Well,
but you know what?
I'm talking about Mexico is a shit.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Shit show.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's all I mean.
Mm-hmm. But the best part is, that's going to come back to haunt them. It may not be, it'll be in our lifetimes, but it's going to come back. It's going to haunt those Democrats because they're going to come back. They're going to say, you know what? We're not going to fall for this patronizing baloney. We want to run our business. We don't want you telling us what to do. In fact,
I think we've seen that backlash in the Latino vote.
Absolutely. You want to talk about an independent group of people?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, I agree. Let's circle back to the schools, though. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
You've been around schools. I've been around schools.
Yep.
And we get back to this issue of white, black, purple, yellow, Hispanic, whatever.
Right.
Have you ever noticed from kindergarten to about sixth or seventh grade, every kid pretty much gets along?
Yeah, pretty much colorblind. That's how I was raised.
Right. Have you ever noticed that?
Yep.
And then what happens? We get into cliques.
Right.
We get a little more mature.
Right.
We believe the people that we surround ourselves with. Maybe people live in a shitty house.
Are you talking about critical race theory? Are you getting ready to touch on that?
I was going to just throw this softball out at you to say, you know, now we have a whole system pushed down from the top, from the feds through the universities, now leaking into high school and grade school, saying that what I teased about 10 minutes ago, that our country is built on a lie.
Okay.
Right? That's critical race theory, saying that blacks are bigger, smarter, stronger, faster, more powerful, descendant of Egyptian kings and queens, that Mighty Whitey is really stupid, and really, they're the ones that ought to have been running everything, except
we kept them down?
Well, they forgot the part about their people sold them to our people, and the English and the whatever. You know, they forgot all that part, but that you can't even call the master bedroom a master bedroom anymore in the critical race theory.
You can't even, you know what, did you hear what the FAA is doing?
No.
You can't call it a cockpit anymore.
Well, I mean, that's always been a little risque. Right? But I mean, these kind of things,
call it the armpit.
Right. When you get into school environments, I was raised in a very large city, San Francisco.
Pretty diverse, too.
Very diverse. I lived in a mixed neighborhood, right? Did I have encounters with people of different colors and races every day?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I did. Were all of them positive? No. But they weren't with the white people either.
Yeah, everybody's got...
People are people.
Well, and I will tell you that I believe there are crosses to bear. Everybody has it. Are there freaking pointy hat assholes out there? Absolutely. Are there... people out there that hate white people? Yes. Are there people out? Yes. There's all kinds of that stuff. And that's a whole different topic when it comes to like implicit biases and stuff like that.
But they won't, the schools won't embrace the champion of civil rights from the 1960s, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. No one wants to embrace that. And that is that character, the content of your character defines who you are.
You want to watch a really, not the color you want to watch skin. A really good video?
I do.
A friend of mine sent me this video and from Malcolm X, who I'm not a huge fan of. I understand where some of his maybe anger comes from. But his anger was not directed necessarily at white people. His anger was directed at white Democrats. I watched two videos on him. One statement that he made was, if you vote Democrat, you are a traitor to your own race.
Well, that's historical.
Absolutely. I mean, and Democrats are the white liberals are the worst enemy to the black people.
Right. Imagine this. And this has happened. We talked about this earlier today, but I want to bring it up in the context of education. If you say to a whole class of people, you're too stupid and you're too you don't have the ability to do this, so we're going to do everything for you, wouldn't that be offensive to you?
Yeah.
I mean, on the surface of things, let's turn the tables. Somebody from the federal government said, hey, all you white people, you can't do anything. We're just going to give you money every month. Oh, wait. The stimulus checks. They are saying that.
Right.
We can't get along without the federal government, the nanny, the lover. Well, right? But I mean, it's all the same part and parcel.
It boils down to this. If I can get half the voters, not half of the voters, half the people that vote.
Yeah, half of the half.
If I can disenfranchise right. a whole you're bunch right. of people and I can get half the people that are going to vote on the public dole, they're always going to vote for me.
Yeah. And I mean, in education, you have these things we just mentioned. You talked about all these master level things that are trying to be pushed over on sixth graders. I don't know how a teacher would attempt to even
seventh
teach.
Seventh grade integrated global studies.
Talk to me.
Here's one for you. Under history, evaluate the changing patterns of class, ethnic, racial, and gender structures and relations. Consider immigration, migration, and social mobility.
Again,
what the hell's that got to do with anything?
Again, it's just one modality for this teacher or series of teachers, educators, whatever, to say to your kids, this is what's true and this is what's false. What does that even mean?
Human-induced environmental change.
I think they're trying to talk about global warming.
No.
But things of that nature...
Blending of cultures and societies. Impact of scientific, technological, and educational innovations within historical time periods. Okay, I get that. I like that. But there's a lot of stuff...
Let me frame this for you. When I wrote the news for Fox 10 here in Phoenix, okay, in the 90s, one of my first jobs in broadcasting, I wrote the news. I had to write to a 6th or 7th grade level, or the producers wouldn't put it on air.
Right.
Now, here you have a syllabus for, what did you say, 7th graders?
This is 7th grade.
That sounds like master's level education. Now, who's fooling who here? There's no kid on planet Earth that understands anything you just said. Mm-mm. I don't care who. I don't care. You're listening to the podcast and my kid can understand.
I would love to see.
That's total
bullshit. How would you take this statement and make a 7th grader under? Evaluate how the diversity of a society impacts its social and political norms.
You can't.
You can't do that.
I mean, unless you're going to be a social engineer.
Right.
Which is what the teachers and administration have become. Because within the context of that, they'll say things like, well, you know, the white people stole everything and the indigenous people and black people should have everything. I can just hear that spilling out of their mouths. What else you got?
Let's see.
That's a good one.
Analyze how changes in population distribution patterns affect changes in land use in places and regions. Let me translate
to
you.
Seriously.
You want me to translate
that's
to you?
That's 7th grade again?
That's the 7th grade. Let me translate that
please,
to you.
Please, yeah.
We don't want you to have suburban areas because that's bad. We don't want you to grow and have growth because that's bad. That's
right, because you're taking over land.
Yeah.
And the land belongs to the earth.
Did you hear? Oh,
earth belongs to us all.
Did you hear about the pipeline that Trump was building across the reservations and stuff, that huge pipeline that he approved?
Yeah.
And that Biden promised to get rid of and not have, all his environmental shit?
Yeah.
Well, I guess today everybody is up in arms because he's not going to make that go away. He signed off on something that's going to legitimize that. I just found that. Yeah, right?
Some big donor showed up at the White House.
Right, right.
Well, the history of the Keystone XL pipeline, very, very interesting. You know, I dug into this pretty hard. And here's a little fascinating little blurb. You know, Barack Obama used to be the president.
Did he?
You remember that?
Yeah. Oh, the beer summit. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then the Keystone XL pipeline is a way to move. Are you ready for this?
Oil.
Shale oil.
Oil.
Shale oil. Like, you know, from shale.
Mm-hmm.
In a slurry. Right?
Right.
Not traditional oil, just black crude.
Right.
Shale oil in a slurry. In a pipeline from Canada through the Midwest.
Right.
All the way down to Louisiana.
Right.
To be distributed to twofold refineries and or export.
Right.
Well,
sounds like progress to me.
The Canadians needed to move the oil shale.
Right.
We needed the jobs to create the pipeline.
Right.
And we needed petroleum. We needed gas, right?
Right.
So who visited the White House 58 times in 3 months leading up to Barack Obama saying no to the pipeline? It was none other than Warren Buffett.
Ah.
And why? Because Warren Buffett and his company own the Burlington Northern Railway. And they offered the president to move Canada's shale oil and tanker cars from Canada to Louisiana. And they made the money.
Ah.
Always economics.
I wonder,
right?
I wonder which is more expensive. Pumping it through a pipe that's going to be there forever.
Or more dangerous, by the way. Do trains derail?
No.
Never.
No, there's no terrorist out there going to blow up trains.
But I'm just saying in general.
Right.
Yeah, I think if you lived in the Midwest, which I did for 13 years.
Right.
There's a train derailment every week.
All the
somewhere.
Time. Yeah.
Right?
It happens.
Because trains, there's a lot of trains in the Midwest.
I wonder if an oil tanker train that fell over and dumped a bunch of oil on the ground, I wonder what they would say. Oh, wait a minute. It was Warren Buffett that...
it's all good.
It's all good.
Well, he could afford to clean up. But my point is, if you go back to this, it's raw economics,
sure.
Right? That's what we're talking
you
about.
You know, on that whole topic of this nonsense and global warming and, you know, alternative fuels and stuff like that, I've got a friend of mine that is a foreman up near St. John's, Arizona, who there's a big coal-burning plant that makes electricity and stuff like that. And they're doing some close downs and stuff like that. But this guy's been – he's a foreman. This guy knows coal. This guy knows power.
Yeah.
And we were talking, having a little adult beverage. Mine was a virgin Shirley Temple because I don't drink anymore. But
– or any less. But
or any less. But anyways, you know what he told me? He goes, it is absolutely impossible to run our country on anything but –
cool.
Fossil fuels. You can't do it. There's too much power that's needed.
No, you're
it's absolutely impossible. So, and I, whether you buy off on this global warming bullshit or not, it don't matter.
Let's frame it this way. Let's get back to education for just a second. This stuff is master's level poppycock.
But you know what? I wonder.
There's no way. There's no way they're able to discern or distill that information for young people without some kind of engineering to their minds. Because it's way too deep, right? You and I would struggle to have a cogent conversation about these things.
Right.
Right. And I think we're pretty smart guys. But let's circle the wagons.
All right.
What is the truth? Right. If you go back to our Christian roots.
Right.
When God gave us dominion of the earth, he didn't say fuck it up.
No.
He said be good stewards.
Right.
Right. And I agree with that. If companies.
And I suppose there's always going to be that line. What is the definition? What is the threshold
of a good steward?
And I get it.
I would challenge every company that fires coal or natural gas or oil to be the best stewards of the planet.
Absolutely.
Right. Because we lived, you and I are old enough. We lived through the 70s and 80s and 90s where companies were caught red-handed dumping bullshit into rivers.
I get that.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm saying let's, and that's what I think. Gave the same ammunition to the environmentalists as greed gives to the socialist.
Right.
Look at all these people with all this money. It's not fair. The socialist gets his ammunition.
I bet you if you drill down in this education syllabus that I'm looking in there, you know, there's probably a little bit about bad oil, bad fossil fuels.
I agree.
You know.
And that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
That this is that muckety muck that you're reading.
Right.
Is the surface dressing.
Why aren't they teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic.
And let's have a band. Let's have sports teams.
Well, you know what?
Let's do art. And I'm okay with that, too.
And I agree that, you know what? Art and band is very, very important.
But with this, what you're reading from this in Arizona, this is actual, factual today stuff, is politics.
Absolutely.
They're all subject to prudential judgments that kids cannot make.
No, it's brainwashing.
Right.
It's brainwashing.
That's a fancier way of saying politics.
No, it's freaking brainwashing.
Right, but and kids, you know what? There's no way kids can discern that.
And it's none of their goddamn business. It's none of their business.
It's out of their purview because adults in power make prudential judgments.
But then we circle around one more time back to the family not taking care of their damn children, and they don't know this because they don't sit down and read this shit.
Amen to that. So we need to make stuff available because we'll reiterate this. In fact, if you just tuned in to Anchor.fm, this is Countermeasures. He's Greg Rath. I'm Bruce Nixon. This is Countermeasures. And we just want to give you ammunition, food for the journey that makes sense because parents are the first educators of their children. You have, if you're a mom and a dad or just a mom by yourself or a dad by yourself, you have the sole responsibility to educate your children.
Period.
The schools were put in place to assist in the
technical,
skills of reading, writing, arithmetic.
Well, but think about it this way. You know, how do we know whether this kid is going to be the next Pulitzer Prize winner or the next Nobel cure Prize for cancer, winner, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what? That is what schools are going to help with because all of a sudden, these kids start bubbling to the top. You know, you're going to have your low, your middle, and your upper. But a good education is going to have these people bubble. And guess what?
I agree.
A good education is going to, a truly good education is going to separate, you know, the chaff. You know what I'm saying? You know, and some people are going to be better at hammer and nails. Some people are going to be better. That's what we need to find out through education. But if you're confusing them with all this social nonsense and this social justice and global warming and all this other garbage.
I mean, honestly, you've been in this 15 minutes and I don't understand half of what you said.
It's amazing.
How would a seventh grader know?
There's no way. And you know how they're boiling this down.
Yeah, I do.
You should be driving an electric car.
Or
you should be
charge your electric car because we have power shortages, which just happened in California.
I wonder
the governor issued a proclamation to Californians. Please don't charge your electric cars. We have a power shortage. So
my question to this.
They can't have it both ways.
And here's the other question. Where the hell's that power coming from?
Not
coal plant.
Not to mention.
Jesus.
Not to mention.
People are
praise his holy name. Not to mention the rape of Mother Earth to find rare earth metals to power cell phones, laptops, and cars.
You're talking about the batteries?
All the parts and components. There's 34. If you looked at the periodic table of elements, pick up your cell phone. There's 34 different elements from that table in your phone worth a lot of money, which is why they're so expensive. And now we need you to recycle your phones. Turn in your phone and we'll recycle the metals. Well, give me $100. I'll give you my broken phone.
Right.
But it's just another racket. But
right.
The idea that you could strip the earth. You've seen a strip mine. You've seen the strip mines in Arizona.
Yeah.
Looking for copper.
Yeah.
They're egregious assaults on Mother Earth. But
yeah,
they're necessary.
You know what, though? But they're necessary.
No, I'm not saying they're random and not to be allowed. But they're egregious assaults.
I guess my question is, what all that mining that occurred and all the technology that is gleaned from all that stuff that we've dug out of the ground and all the stuff that we've made, you don't think that the electric car, the all the stuff that they're pushing on us, you know, solar and all, don't you think all that technology came from people doing those types of jobs? And if they never figured that out, you know, that is a progression to where we are. It's all important. It's all important.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying it's the greatest single-handed rape of Mother Earth. I mean, you think coal mining is bad or you think copper mining is bad. My point is try mining lithium or other rare earth metals where they send kids into slavery to dig shit out of the ground. That's not being a good steward is all I'm saying.
Right. No, I get it. But you know what? It's still necessary.
Well, I don't think electric cars are necessary. I would say au contraire, mon frere, to you. You know what I mean? I think you can make a 100 mile per gallon fossil fuel car any day of the week.
Well, I guess here's
so why do you need an electric
car? Well, here's a simple economic question. What's an electric car cost? 50, 60,000 and then, you know, and that's after the governmental kickback, whatever that may be.
That's big.
So my question to you is you go out and buy and then you go buy a Corolla, which is about the same size car that gets about 40 miles to the gallon. That's about less than
half.
That's probably a third of the price of that.
Right.
How long would you have to drive that electric? How many miles would you have to drive that electric vehicle to make up that difference of $30,000-$35,000? I don't think you could. I don't think it'd last that long.
I agree. And that's what I'm getting at. The monsters in the room want you to believe that fossil fuels are bad. I'm saying my position is this.
And it's even worse than that. No, they're mad because every time you read anything about fossil fuels, they'll talk about bad fossil, but it's actually further down than that. They don't like the people that make money from it.
Well, I guess you hit the proverbial nail on the head. They don't want anybody but themselves to have power control.
Right.
Right. So they're not all part of the same club.
You don't think that
the ultra elite.
And guess what? These are all the people that make this silly syllabus.
And we can push all the way back to the turn of the 19th to the 20th century when the federal government had an idea to create a Department of Education. Who did they turn to? They turned to the robber barons, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Chases, and they said, will you help us build this system? Because you guys have so much money, you must understand how the world works. And in return for giving them access to help build the education system in America, the Rockefellers and their allies, the Vanderbilts and everyone else, got to write the books. And from that moment forward, the ultra rich and powerful got to set the agenda in American public schools. That's a fact.
And then the next question, who is the ultra rich now?
Well, it's still the Rockefellers. The foundation still exists. People would say things like the Rothschilds, which may be a myth. But you've got the Musks, Bezos.
What about the Gates?
The Walmarts, the Gates. They're all there. The ones, right?
Right. And I'm not bagging on them being rich.
No.
But look at their political alliances.
This program on countermeasures about education. What is the point of education, right? From our vantage point, it's parents teaching character and goodwill to their children, and with the assistance of schools, being taught reading, writing, and arithmetic. Let's have a band. Let's have a football team. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
What's happened is the ultra elites have set a political agenda that there's too many people in the world. We want a carbon tax. You're carbon, by the way. You're 100% carbon. So you need to be taxed.
I'm actually a diamond.
Ooh.
I am under pressure.
Dun, 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 dun. But with that agenda in mind, you want fewer people. And we can tie this back neatly into a bow to eugenics, right? You want fewer people, but what do they want from the education system? What did the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts want? It's drone workers, right? You only need them smart enough to be able to go to the factory, add 2 + 2, and pull the lever, make the widget, stamp out the car. Henry Ford, all part of the machine that wanted people smart enough to work in the factory, but not smart enough to run for office necessarily.
Right.
Right? This is the history and the legacy of public education in America. Smart enough to get by, but not smart enough to make change. Right? You look at all the cities and all the things where we have agreed to live. Right? We live in this typical beehive mentality where we have to have this. Right?
Right.
You got to have teachers. We love teachers. And in fact, I don't want anybody listening to me tonight to think that I don't like teachers.
Sure.
I love teachers.
Absolutely.
I love genuine, authentic teachers that have goodwill and want to teach kids. I know a lot of them. I don't like administrators and districts and schools with agendas like this.
Right.
The people would be appalled if they saw just this little thing that you're saying that no seventh grader on the planet would understand.
No.
Unless they're re-engineered to understand it and the will of that district or that particular school.
Right.
Right, but that's what we've got. So our appeal tonight is for parents.
And again, so is it any surprise that your Red for Ed people that are all wearing the Red for Ed shirts are sitting down at the Capitol booing the Republicans that are going to bless the voucher system?
Right.
No, because this garbage right here doesn't get taught in private schools.
No, it doesn't get taught in private schools. In fact, the antithesis is taught in private school. I've had two of my kids, while we lived in Arizona, have graduated from St. Mary's High School. The others have gone to Most Holy Trinity grade school. They learn how to read and write. They do arithmetic. They have school teams. That's it. Mm-hmm. They might have, obviously, we have theology, philosophy, the classic book program, teaching your kids how to read.
Right.
I mean, functionally illiterate children can do nothing but rely on the state because their parents can't support them.
Right.
So they're going to live on the state. And I don't want to drift into that weeds. And I'm not putting anybody down. I'm saying it's time to help change that.
Well, and again, we're getting close to the end here, but I will tell you, it just reiterates the fact that mom and dad need to be involved in their children.
It's not need to be, have to be. Would
have
you agree?
They
have an obligation.
They have an obligation.
Right.
You know, they got this gift from God. The kid didn't choose to be here.
Right.
You know, you chose to, you know, knock your wife or your girlfriend up. And, you know, it's not the kid's fault. It's not the kid's fault.
No, I know.
And
I'm only laughing because there's bad jokes in there. But I know.
But nobody cares. You know, it's just apathy. It's apathy.
I get it. We're all stuck in a workaday world.
Sure,
right? We're all stuck there, right? And I get that. Everybody,
well,
I get that.
Well, then choose not to have a child.
Or break free of that workaday world and make a decision to change your children's life.
Well, you know,
read with them. Well, imagine how revolutionary that just might be.
Every
one suggestion.
Night, an hour, I read with the children. Right. My wife read with the children every single night.
Encourage
Grab
them to
your
read.
Kid and take him outside, hold him on your shoulder when he's 2 or 3 years old, and let him touch a leaf and call it a green leaf, for criminy sakes.
Right.
Don't sit them in front of SquarePants, SpongeBob, or whatever the hell it is on television.
Or the smartphones now.
Or the smartphones. Take them out and let them play in the mud and say, that's mud. That's brown mud.
My biggest regret having children in the modern era is that I think you experience this and I experience this. From the time we were old enough to use the public payphone with a dime, we could be gone until the streetlights came on and we were just gone. We played in the dirt. We played baseball, football. We rode trolley cars or buses and went with our friends and did things.
Right.
We learned how to be little people.
Right.
And get along with other people.
Right.
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 And now we've got these young people that are ensconced in their smartphones and their laptops and their televisions and their Xbox.
These goddamn umbilical cords is what it is.
And they can't get along with anybody. So you have this social construct where they're dying for
information. Look at how communication has evolved. I've talked about this before, and again, it's totally a tangent thing, but I just find it interesting. You know, before phones and stuff, what happened? You know, we wrote a letter, you know, or, you know.
Before the advent of the telephone?
Right. So then I remember when we had party lines still and that sort of thing, and there was no, you know, you had a phone. There was a cord on it. You couldn't walk around with it. You couldn't sit on it.
Typically in the kitchen.
Typically in the kitchen. And guess what? Mom and dad could hear what you're talking about. So you didn't sit there all day because you didn't want to talk about your screwing your girlfriend or whatever.
Waka, waka, waka.
But then what happens? So that phone turns into a portable phone, a wireless.
Right, right.
So now I can be on that phone all day long. And then it turns into, you know, cell phones and emails. And next thing you know, I got kids texting across the damn
universe.
Well, not even across, in the same damn room.
Right, that's true. But I'm holding my smartphone in the palm of my hand right now, showing you this. But you could literally launch, guide, and direct the space shuttle with the power of this phone in my hand. That's
right.
That much power in this phone, right? Which is too much power for kids. I'm guilty of it, though. I just assumed as phones evolved, they were phones, right?
My high school kids didn't have phones.
My eighth grade daughter, well, you got straight A's.
I was looked
grade,
at like I was a freaking. They looked at me like I had three heads when my kids didn't have smartphones in high school.
Right.
Do you really want them surfing porn? Do you really want them seeing the garbage that's on television?
No.
Do you want them listening to Barack Obama? Do you want them to listen to Joe Biden? Give them the goddamn phone. But I don't want them listening to that.
No, I'm with you 100%. I
want them to believe what I believe.
Tactically, I made a mistake. I may have lost some of my children to the internet, and it's hard to admit that.
But you know what? I think at the time, I think it's a double-edged sword. The internet's an incredible, incredible, credible tool.
Right.
I mean, think about how we used to do research papers.
I know.
You had to go to the library and look at. Remember the Dewey Decimal System?
Of course, you had the card index.
My kids
system.
Look at me like I got a two heads when they talk about Dewey Decimal.
I mean, in
system.
High school and college, you had to make friends with some girl that knew how to do that. Right.
You know, absolutely. So you know. So now, so I. It's incredible. Instead, now I've got two computer screens up. They're both in. I've got 4, 5, 6 websites up.
And you can go anywhere in the world.
Absolutely.
And that's amazing. It is a gift.
Absolutely a
but
gift.
But it's not a gift in the hands of a young person who doesn't know how to use it.
Good God, no.
Right.
And
that's
God,
the problem. No. If we circle all the way back, we're wrapping up Countermeasures tonight. Bruce Nixon, Greg Rath on the airwaves with you. We've been talking about just some 6th and 7th grade education issues here in Arizona. I think we've hit the highlights that there's way too much in there. There's no way 7th and 6th graders are comprehending that without being engineered by an adult. Would you agree with that statement?
I'll take it even one step further. It's social justice nonsense. It's stuff that is none.
Are you not sensitive to the migration patterns of peoples from across different ethnicities and gender gaps?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Wait, yeah, if you want to do it the correct way, sure.
Can we go on the record?
Yeah.
How many genders are there?
2.
Right. I know that sounds insensitive. Maybe you're struggling one way or another listening tonight, but
sure.
But isn't it easier?
Well, my question to you is when the archaeologist is out there digging in the desert, mm-hmm. and he pulls out a body from 2,000 years ago?
It's a they. Come on now.
Is it a male or is it a female?
It's a they.
Okay.
Don't be so insensitive.
Now, I will be sensitive and say that there's folks out there that have different belief systems and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And I get it.
But to force it on our children is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, because it's wrong.
Within
in my
the
opinion.
Education system.
It's none of their damn business.
There are schools all over the country sending kids home for not saying that he's a she or they's a them. And to me, this is the epitome of
what the hell's
sickness.
That got to do with building a car or
reading a book.
Reading a book. That's none of their damn business. Stop it. Get out of my frickin' bed. The liberals will be the first one to tell you get them out of the bedroom. Well, get out of my frickin' kids' heads. For God's sake. Enough is enough for criminy's sake.
It's not enough because they're not going to be satisfied until they have them all. It's going to be like the invasion of the body snatchers. We're going to wake up one day and kids will be in watermelon pods.
I'll leave you with this. My mom's teacher for 35 years.
We should have interviewed her.
We will. We all will. Right. I will tell you that she prayed for children to be read to and fed and clothed so she could educate them.
That's a great set of points there. Now, I get as angry as you do, you see the billboards, 1 in 5 children will go hungry tonight in Arizona, and kids go to school without being fed and or properly clothed. Why is that not a crime in Arizona? Isn't it?
It is a crime, but we won't prosecute it.
Because, you know, kids can starve literally and can't eat unless they go to a public school.
Right.
But we won't prosecute.
Right. No, we won't.
Because?
Because we're stupid. Because we're stupid. Because we put up with it. Because we're apathetic.
Right.
Because we don't care.
Right.
We're more concerned about flopping down in front of the TV and watching some garbage on the television.
So we have some work to do. If we want
to
help.
I don't know where the hell to start. But you know what? You know where you start? On countermeasures. Yeah. That's where you start. You want to join our club. Join us. You know what? Be a part of it. You know, that's one of the hardest things about having these types of beliefs. You feel like you're by yourself. Come join us.
That's true. Send us we're linked up through anchor.fm.
Anchorfm.com.
Yeah, that too.
You can find
wherever we are,
you can find countermeasures on Spotify. Go to Spotify.
But there's a contact link in there to
right.
send us a message.
Yeah.
And if you are so inclined, we'd love to hear from you. It's been a great show. I feel like this is the one we needed to take for 2 hours, but everybody's got to go home.
Right.
You know, especially the people trying to. Oh, you are home.
I am home.
That's not fair. Well, I've got to drive, you know, 40 miles in a mule.
Oh, uphill in the
both
snow.
Both ways.
Fucking.
Thank God it's the internet.
Amen.
No FCC fines for you.
Yep.
All right. Well, should we say goodnight to our sponsors? We want to thank again.
Lifeboat Coffee.
Yes.
And 7th Street and Dunlap. OLT Fabrication, 2301 West Broadway.
And if you have an inclination, check out Lifeboat Coffee online at lifeboatcoffee.com. That's lifeboatcoffee.com. And if you need any steel job, large or small, call OLT Fabrication 602-276-4841. Again, that's 602-276-4841. We are grateful for their support. And next week, I think we're going to dovetail right into some of the deeper issues here about the government versus the parent, so on and so forth, and population. Because did you know, as a teaser, that replacement population is about 2.1 people per couple? That would be...
According to the leader of Greenpeace, we should not have any more than two people because we are destroying the planet.
And I'll just leave it at that. Say goodnight, Greg.
Goodnight, Greg.